I'll start, and then you see if we go anywhere with it, okay? Or do you have one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Porn.
Society is ruined and everything is awful. Today was the day it really hit me in the face. And I don't know what to do about it. I mean, I'm going to have to pick myself up and keep on moving on. But I tried to do a epic arrival shot on the drone today, arriving at the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is one of those things where it doesn't just happen. Like, it took 25 minutes of thinking and planning it out and, like, really getting it all kind of squared away. Like, how I'm going to pull up to the studio, fly the drone, where I'm going to fly the drone, where is it safe to fly it while I'm driving? Those kinds of questions that one must ask themselves when trying to vlog. And I get out on a parking lot, get the drone all set up. I get the frickin' little propellers on each engine. I get the phone in the little holster. I get the app launched. I wait as the drone slowly gets like 14 GPS signals. And I just sort of sit there, and there's a cop that starts pulling up in like an SUV with all kinds of gear on it. And I sort of started to get a little cold feet. I'm like, I wonder if I'm going to get in trouble for this. Like, you never know, right? And the cop kind of drives by slowly and checks me out. And I'm like, okay, all right, he doesn't stop. And I look down at my controller. It says, can't take off. I'm like, what? And
did he have a scrambler?
No, that's what I was like, is the cops do something? Like, no. And I zoom out, and there's been and I realize there's like this area that's blocked out for the whole area around the studio. And DJI has recently updated the app with new restricted flight zones. And now the entire area around the studio is marked as restricted.
Do not fly.
So it won't even go off the ground.
Despite having registered, right? Because you had to register with the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so despite being registered and being logged into my DJI account with an active data connection, I just can't take off. And what's really frustrating is other drone manufacturers, what they'll let you do is go up to like 80 or 50 meters, which is not very high up, but it's high enough to get a good shot. And airplanes, they're at 500 feet.
Right, yeah.
So the way it used to work here is I was in a restricted flight zone, and so I was limited to 300 feet. So airplanes are at 500 feet, and I'm at 300 feet. So we got a good buffer between us. It actually seems like a pretty good system. But yeah, so, and I think I guess I can't get any more drone shots of the studio.
Okay, so if you go down to the end of the street, to that mini mart, or you know the topless bar, topless baristas,
yeah.
And you fly it this way, will it just drop out of the sky?
No, it'll just stop like it hit a wall.
Are you serious? Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah, it is.
It's like a mime, you know? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
There's an invisible wall, and it just beep, 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 bump, and it just stops right at the invisible wall, and it can't. You can go side to side. I can go back, but I can't go forward.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's what she said.
It really feels like I've surrendered governance over my own device, and it makes me want to bust out an older model drone that doesn't have the firmware is to support these restrictions or something, but then the optics aren't as good.
Right.
And some of the tricks I use to do the drive and fly.
Wow. It can't even 50 feet. It can't do anything.
I bet you there's like firmware hacks out there that disable that.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
But not when there's a cop driving.
But the thing that's always, you're always up against is DJI is constantly updating the app. And as they update the app, they eventually require a minimum version of the firmware.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've enabled signing on all ends. So the firmware has to be signed. The app has to be signed. You have to be logged in. The login token has to be assigned on the drone itself too. So your login status to the DJI servers is tracked on both the drone and the controller. Like,
so what you're saying is they got you.
They really do.
On so many levels.
And what are they going to do, though? Right? Because they're in a position where they've got to play ball or else they're going to get regulated into the ground. So they're being hyper-aggressive with this so that way they don't get in trouble. Not a good position. So yeah, anyways, that's basically the sign that society's over, don't you think? We're all doomed.
We can't fly our drones, so society ends.
Yeah. Well, it's the circumstances around it. I mean, there's that. But yeah, yeah.
I will have to say, somebody has a drone just like yours in my neighborhood. And when I see it flying over my house, I think, is that Chris?
So it's happened more than once now?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's hovering over my house.
Yeah, they're flying low when I saw it.
It's weird.
Yeah. Just go out there and like flip it off or something. Maybe they're vlogging.
Maybe, but it's just bizarre.
Do they do it during any particular time of day?
During the daytime, like when it's typically late afternoon, early evening.
One of the things I've noticed is it's happening more and more for real estate.
Yes.
So real estate agents are getting, in fact, I've had a couple of people
ask
that me. Are in real estate that are to ask me to do it. I'm like, boy, I barely even have enough time to drone for myself.
But one of my college colleagues was asking, who can I hire to do this?
Yeah. Yeah. I might do it for a few friends and family because it doesn't take that much time.
Sure.
And it is kind of a nice value add. I know building manufacturers also that are looking at like either buying a piece of real estate or selling that piece of real estate or monitoring construction are also interested in drones. It's going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of these restrictions are going to seem sort of too restrictive because you're going to have to be able to fly. You know, if you could just fly a drone high enough to inspect a roof, for example, you don't have to go up to airplane distance. And if an airplane's flying low enough to crash into your roof, you got other problems. So they're going to have to reverse some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Either that or we're all doomed.
So Chris and Ange, I have a question for you. What basic life skills did the opposite not have when you guys first started dating?
Well, that was like 18 years ago now.
Yeah.
That's a lot of things.
Yeah, I was 15 and he was 17. Like it was, there was a lot of life skills we didn't have.
Yeah, I would say so.
Well, which one surprised you though?
Probably for Ange, it would be what she ate and how she ate, like mac and cheese mostly. Just like her daughter now, interestingly enough.
I still eat like that.
Well, a lot of people do, actually. A lot of people do. I bet the list for myself is probably longer.
Yeah.
You got any good ones?
Well, you still have issues with this. He will not bank information that feels non-important.
That's
right?
True, yeah.
And sometimes, I mean, actually... Sometimes he just remembers the weirdest stuff. But we had dinner when they got back into town from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Chris and Hadia,
do
you have any Thanksgiving plans? Because my mom kind of wants to do Thanksgiving on Friday. So I'd like to take the kids there, you know. And Chris was like, well, what day is Thanksgiving on? And Hadia and I just look at each other like in this knowing way, like, yep. That's Chris.
Thanksgiving
is always on a Thursday.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, Thanksgiving's. I know. I realized a little bit after I said it that Thanksgiving's always on a Thursday. You know what it is? It's like exactly what you said. It's like, I don't care.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I just don't care. And it is. It's funny. It's awful because it does bite me. Like I say stupid things like, when is Thanksgiving?
Another thing that's always fun and interesting, and still the case sometimes. If he wants something, he'll spend the money to get it.
What does that mean? Isn't that kind of normal? Like, what does that mean?
But, like, it might... Well, for example...
Okay.
He worked at the school district when we met. Mm-hmm. And he got a marginal paycheck for doing it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't working yet and lived, 25 miles away?
Oh, I know where this is going already.
Yeah, so he'd bring his checkbook to school. He had a checkbook.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
Yeah.
He had a checkbook, and he would give me the check, and I would write myself a check to buy a cookie for breakfast.
Yep.
And, but more so, he would pay a taxi service to come get me and bring me to his house. And I think you blew through like all of your income from the school district.
Yeah.
That
the taxis
were
not cheap.
For the few couple months before you started driving.
Yeah. And you know, for the business we were subsidizing, they really should have been giving us a better deal.
Absolutely. They lived two driveways from me. And granted, I lived out there, but they were two driveways from me. And they were transporting drugs.
Yeah, they were driving coke.
So like,
we were just, it was just a front business.
Yeah, like we were helping the front.
We didn't know, but then we discovered.
Yeah.
A little bit after I got my car, actually.
The timing
worked out pretty great. And the thing is, we've shared this story, I think, once before, but the thing what's funny about it is this was like a high-class taxi service because they would only use diesel Mercedes that were shipped from overseas. And you're like, oh, these guys have real high standards. This little podunk taxi service in Arlington, Washington has these high-class Mercedes diesel standards imported from Germany.
It's good for hiding drugs.
That's how they got the drugs into the country, was inside the cars.
Yep. So anyway, but also, every holiday, Chris would always go over the top. And I'm understanding my mom's frustration at this point now. And here's the example. For we met at the beginning of the school year, and for Christmas that year, he bought me this outrageous stereo that had the big speakers,
25 CDs, because that was the thing back then or whatever.
50 plus one. It was 50 plus one, and still had tape cassette.
Oh, yeah, two of them.
Yeah, two. And anyway, even at the lowest volume and being on the opposite side of the house, my mom was pissed that she could hear the bass. So mad. Anyway, I got the girls a Princess CD player, burned them a CD. Close your door. My office is right on the other side. Close your door. I don't want to hear it. Like, I want to hear my own music. And then they, constantly opening and closing the door. And I'm like, I can hear it. Close the door. Anyway, so that's kind of fun.
It's payback time. That's very true. It happens. It's all come around. It all comes back to bite you in the end.
Does.
DigitalOcean.com. Go over there and create an account and then apply our promo code. Here's the thing. It's one word. You just apply that to the account and then you get the $10 credit. Now, DigitalOcean is an easy way to spin up what they call a droplet. That's a server on their really fast infrastructure. Everything is SSDs, from the low-end rigs to the really crazy high-end rigs with hundreds of gigs of RAM and multiple CPU cores up the wazoo. It is super fast. Then they combine that with 40 gigabit connections, Linux for the host system, KVM for the hypervisor, and then all kinds of really great storage and load balancing features and monitoring features and firewall features. And now, object storage. And this is a huge deal. If you're familiar with object storage on services like S3, it's a very similar thing. Although you could use it just as simple file storage too, with public URLs and their crazy fast bandwidth and expiring links. It's a really competitive offering now, and they've just got it going. So they're offering free trials if you want to play around with object storage as just an end user or as a developer. Go over to DigitalOcean.com. Check out that sweet, sweet, sweet dashboard, too. They got a dashboard for days. It's really simple, either for beginners or for pros. In fact, I would bet you, I should have thought this before the show. I could have done a challenge. I bet Ange could log into DigitalOcean and create a server in 2 minutes or less. I bet you it's that simple to use. And here's the thing. As somebody who's been managing virtual servers for decades, which just makes me feel super old, it's also very, very advanced feature set. It's very complete. Now I feel like an old man, so do me a favor and go over to DigitalOcean.com and use the promo code DOUNPLUGGED. And if you feel like I'm still a young pup who shouldn't be saying that, really stick it to me by using that promo code. And not DOUNPLUGGED. Don't give it to those guys. Use the promo code Here's the Thing. That Linux Unplugged show doesn't deserve it. Promo code Here's the Thing over at DigitalOcean.com.
I think the fact that you said young pup kind of says how old you are.
Just a young pup.
I love how you're like, Ange is so stupid, even she could do it.
No. I mean, like, you've never created one before. That's all. I didn't mean that. So I've been back from New York for a couple of days. This is like the third show I've recorded the second show? I don't know. It's starting to blur together. And I'm working on a couple of more stories from... I think I'm going to call it Stories from the Big Apple.
Cute.
Yeah, we did, some walking around and stuff like that. And Ange, one of the things people might not know is that Ange is in charge of the finances here at Jupiter Broadcasting. He runs the back office stuff for us and keeps everything running there. And so I thought I'd ask her. I don't know if she has a final number yet, but do we know what this trip was cost-wise to Jupiter Broadcasting? Because we tried to do it on the cheap. We took Hadia's very economical car at the expense of my own body and sleep. So I'm hoping it's not like $10,000. And I think if we had taken Lady Jupes, it probably would have been around $3,800, $3,500, maybe.
It would have been a lot more expensive.
Yeah. So, okay. So do you have a rough idea with hotel and gas and parking?
And at least one hotel stay, because sleeping in the car was for the birds, right?
I think, yeah, one hotel, yeah.
Yeah, it was about $2,600.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that is a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Most of it, 75% of that was the darn hotel in New York.
Yeah,
the New York
Hyatt.
Yeah.
Well, that thing was like $470 or $460 a night or something like that.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Plus parking.
Yeah.
You want to know the really nuts thing? The parking was $70 a night.
Wow.
And that was a deal, because the other place that we were going to park at was $90 a night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is horrible.
Isn't that insane? And then, if you want anything out of your car, it's $70 every time. It's so, but we had to get stuff out of the car. So Hadia,
they valet.
But we had the tracker in the car. We told the story last week. We had the tracker in the car. Uh-huh. So Hadia walked to where the tracker was at and then tipped the guys that ran the yard to let her get in the car and get her insulin and stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's horrible.
So it was two things about it, where it was extremely expensive, but at the same time, it was like everything is all inclusive. Like all the food, everything is in one area, so you don't really need the car. So we're like, okay, we can park, and then we're not really paying to park in different places when we drive around, because we just walked everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, I mean, $70 a night was a lot, but it was the first time I was offered $90 a night, I was like, okay, well, I'll take 70.
Yeah, for any naysayers that might say that driving across the United States is way more expensive, why didn't you just fly there? Well, it turns out the gas to drive across the United States was half what it would have cost to fly Chris and Hadia out there. So we actually did save money there.
The thing that really helps is the middle section of the country has really great gas prices. Mm-hmm. And so once you hit Montana, I wish I could buy gas and store it. I really do.
Right, yeah.
I suppose there's people that do that. But, man, if I could somehow get, like, barrels of gasoline and store them somewhere near Lady Jupes and go out to North Dakota and buy it once a year, it would really save a ton of money. In fact, not to make it too much of a tangent of it, but by the third or fourth time I filled up and I looked at it and I thought, this would actually change my life if I lived out here, because it is so much cheaper gas-wise, that it's hundreds of dollars less in a month.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that would actually make a quality of life improvement at that point. Like, right. Wow, I would... Anyways, that's a tangent. But, yeah, I'm also glad we went. There's something that we didn't do enough of, and I want to apologize if people are listening that offered. I wish we could have stopped more and taken people up on the offers to meet up or hang out or get some tea or get some beer. Because I guess I just didn't expect. I'm familiar. Like if we say we're going to go to California, we're going to have a meetup. It's not weird to me. 30 or 40 people might show up, but I didn't expect just people to be watching the journey in real time, and then just. I mean, how many emails do you think you got?
At least a dozen.
And then I probably got the same amount to me directly. Mm-hmm. Then I probably got six or seven, eight offers on Telegram. Few offers on Twitter as I'm driving across. People say, "Hey, man, you want to meet?" Just constantly. Mm-hmm. Just it was really. Every time I was like, "Wow, people are so cool. People are so great." In fact, during the journey, people started offering me places at even park Lady Jupes, and I was like, "Wow." I mean, if we had decided to take Jupes, that might have worked to a degree if the gas wasn't an issue, because we would have found places to park along the way. Even like 30 minutes out of New York, somebody offered me a place to park, and you can jump right on the train and go right in. Really cool people. So thank you, everybody. I wish we could have done that more. Now I know. Now I know that's a thing. And so we'll take that into consideration for future trips. But just as we record this, it's going to be a few days more as you listen. But as we record this, October 3rd, we posted the Inside the Ubuntu Rally vlog, vlog 58, which is my attempt to take the 3 days I was at the Ubuntu Rally and fit it in 9 minutes, but still give you a good sense of what it would be like if you were to attend something like this and how Canonical puts an event on like this. And it's a cool one, I personally think, because some of our favorite Linux friends are all in one video.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see different people that you've heard about working on different stuff, all sort of collaborating together in one spot. So
in person.
Yeah.
In video.
In New York, which is really kind of a cool setting for it all at the same time. And it seems to be well received so far. It hasn't gotten a lot of traction, but people that have watched it seem to like it. It's got just, you know, ton of great comments and stuff. So vlog 58, if you want to see Inside the Ubuntu Rally and what all of this was about. And then keep an eye out for like vlog 59 or so. I'll have more stories from New York with Noah and myself and some Hadia in there and some other of our friends from Canonical. That'll be soon. Hashtag Ask Air. What movie really fucked you guys up? And I have an answer to this. Like, when I was a young kid, I watched Terminator 2, and the whole, like, robot apocalypse thing really made me freaked. So freaked out, I think I even threw up. Like, I was really weirded out by it, and I had nightmares that night, and the whole thing, like, Skynet and the robots stepping on the skull when they're walking through the future, They do like a flash forward to the future where the war is happening and the Terminators don't have any skin and they're just walking around in their metal robot suits stepping on skulls. Anyways, it kind of bothered me. Did you have any movies that screwed you up, like Thing or Clowns or anything that like got you all weirded out?
Well, okay, so you know I like horror movies.
Yeah.
And I like all the Saw movies. I think Saw 5 was my favorite because it was more puzzly. But I'm literally, 9 months pregnant with Dylan and watching a horror movie. I can't remember which one. I was trying to look it up real quick before you threw this to me, but I cannot think of it. And after I had Dylan, like the movie, it was disturbing, but it didn't bother me at the time. But ever since I had Dylan, I can't watch horror movies the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's nope.
Because of the gore or what?
I don't know. I have a really hard time.
Well, you can blame him for the rest of his life for that.
No, I wouldn't blame. No,
My mom still does. My mom still gives me a hard time about stuff. Well, when I was pregnant with you, XYZ happened to me, and I still hear about it.
Yeah.
So you could, I think you get licensed. I think that's part of being a mom. What about you, Beards? Did any movies ever touch the psyche of the beard?
So it depends on your definition of fucked up, because back when I was 5 years old, my mother took me to the theater, and for some reason, she thought it was a good idea to take me to see the original Chucky.
Oh.
Ooh.
When I was 5 years old. Turns out I ended up falling asleep in the theater crying.
Oh, really?
During the movie.
Oh.
But if we're talking about like
yeah.
a different kind of fucked up, there's a movie called Primer that
I'm getting it.
That is a time travel movie.
Oh.
And I've had to watch the movie like 10 times and I still don't fully get it.
Oh, I hate time travel movies. I can't follow them.
Well, this one's like if you don't like normal time travel movies, this one will just break your brain.
Yeah, okay.
And there's also a movie called A Scanner Darkly.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. It's about a future in which America has basically almost lost the war on drugs, and it's really weird because it's filmed in like that whole rotoscoping thing.
Cell shaded.
Yeah, it's like cell shaded rotoscoping, and it. It's just really, really trippy to watch. It really does feel like you are on drugs.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, that is a really crazy movie with Keanu.
Yeah, it's probably one of his best movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say, though, that the Cube series and the Purge series, those are both really good. I do enjoy both of those. In fact, I have the urge to watch the Cube series again.
I have no idea it was, but one of my most like vibrant like shocks in a movie was when I was also young. I was probably about Dylan's age right now, maybe 9. And my dad took me to a rated R movie, which wasn't the first, probably even by even a handful of rated R movies he'd taken me to by that point. But it was definitely the most graphic because there was somebody in the comments might remember what movie this is because it's a pretty iconic scene where there is a murdered woman and she was maybe raped or something and she's spread eagle on the bed, full bush right there on screen. It was the first time I'd ever seen Bush in a movie. Just boom. And this woman's like shot in the head or something. There's blood on the bed and there's just a lot of Bush on screen. And I was like, what? They can show that in a movie? And I still remember that scene from today. I was shocked that my dad had taken me.
Was it 7?
I think I was older when 7 came out. So I don't think so. But yeah, it was graphic like 7 was.
Huh.
Yeah, it was that kind of vibe. And I realized like, whoa. I still remember it to this day.
Along these lines, I am introducing our kids into some of the movies that I grew up watching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fun because I haven't seen them for maybe a couple decades. And so I'm picking up things like, oh.
Yeah.
But my favorite thing that has come out of recently showing them Drop Dead Fred is Bella saying, Mom, can I say something and I won't get in trouble? And I said, what? And she said, that's a bunch of shit.
Oh.
I said, yeah, we don't say that.
Oh,
well,
my God.
I said it at Dad's.
Oh, my God.
So, anyway, because, the Drop Dead Fred, it opens with that, and it's a 5 or 6-year-old saying it. And anyway, it's really fun. That and what was another movie that I showed them? I can't.
Beetlejuice? Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yes, we did watch Beetlejuice.
Yeah, sometimes I go to show them a movie and I realize pretty quickly into it that it's not holding up in a way that's going to work for them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, oh, I feel like these older 80s movies have the longest setups and intros.
Yes.
And the kids just barely have it, sometimes barely enough attention to wait through 20 minutes of world building before the movie starts. And I'm like, wow, they just don't, you know, these days, like Cars starts out and McQueen's like on the racetrack, you know, like it starts much faster.
Yeah.
And I was watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which is a great movie. So much fun. And but it has like 20 minutes of they're going to go camping. They're having marital issues. There's breakfast, like a lot of stuff that has nothing to do with shrinking kids.
Right. Yep.
So in that vein, what movie do you think would make a horrible remake?
Probably. I would say the one I would hate to see, the one that would be the biggest travesty, would be if they tried to remake the Back to the Future series. Because that's such a great trilogy. Even with the third's slightly weak, it's such a good total story, and there's so much inside stuff, and it's such a perfect piece for both... what's his face? Oh, geez, I'm blanking out on Marty's name. But they're just, it was just perfect for their age and the time and where he was at in his career.
You would totally be curious about the technology and the updated graphics and
one of the things that makes Back to the Future great is those two actors were in the prime of their careers there. And you'd have to get another two actors that were really in that. I just don't see it.
So for me, if you were to ask me that question, I'm just going to go ahead and ask it myself. Ace Ventura.
Don't touch it.
Don't touch it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good... That would also...
Well, see, I think those need remakes because the originals were bad.
Shots fired. I'm a neutral party in this, but I can see when shots are fired.
Yeah. I just love Ace Ventura.
I could see that being a disaster to remake that because it needs Jim Carrey. It has to be Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Rikai?
I think almost anything involving... what's his name?
Jim Carrey.
No, Robin Williams.
Oh.
Like
you know, I know they're going to redo Mrs. Doubtfire. You know that. I bet if I Google, they're already doing it.
I can't think of any movie that he's done that anybody else could replicate
They've already redone Jumanji.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah,
really?
The Rock's in it, I think. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Right?
I think it's true, yeah. Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
So it's going to happen. I could see that. I would like to see an updated version of Mork and Mindy too, like a sort of like a sitcom alien thing. I'd be up for that. I'd be down for that, I guess.
Like Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Wait, were there aliens in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They were aliens, weren't they?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Man, it's been so long.
I know. All right. Well, there you go. There's movie talk on the User Show. You guys might remember a few weeks back, I reviewed the Eero wireless system, E-E-R-O. And it's one of these that is mesh, where you can have multiple repeaters and they're all one network. There's a few different products that offer this out there. Eero's one of them. And I put one in the RV, and I put a set in the RV, and I put a set in Angela's house. And I've been almost 100% happy with mine. I think sometimes these reviews are more valuable, though, weeks after using a product other than just the first week. So I thought, let's take a moment and just sort of talk about this problem, because one of the things that the listeners, I think, probably understand and appreciate is good Wi-Fi makes a huge difference in your house these days. So many things are using Wi-Fi, from the phone to the TV devices to so many things, that getting good sorted out Wi-Fi makes things just easier. It makes life easier in the home these days. And so that was sort of my goal with Eero, was to let's stop worrying about it. You know, Angela had this multiple AP system she had to hop through depending on where she was in the house, and some were on G, some were on N, and some were on 2.4, some were on 5 gigahertz. I mean, it was just all over the place. And it still wasn't a perfect solution because there were still some spots in the house that didn't have good coverage. And I had issues because the RV's got metal in the walls. And so I was having a hard time getting signal through the walls of the RV, even though it's a small space. So we both had kind of a signal coverage problem I wanted to solve. And I wanted to solve it and then not have to worry about it for a couple of years. How close do we get?
Oh, it's great. Because before we had, three different Wi-Fis. And it would always default connect to one of them. And I'm not sure why. But it always made it difficult to do Telegram from my bed. I'd always like Telegram would do like the connecting, I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
Connecting.
Yeah. Not like you have a new message, but it won't load it. And so I'd have to be like, oh, yeah, I need to switch to the 5 gigahertz, you know, so I would. And then it would come through right away. Also, this is separate from the Eero, but we replaced the noisiest fan in my closet.
Oh, yeah.
And it's.
That's got to be a game changer.
It is still weird. It is still weird to walk in my bathroom. Like, I have had the habit of closing my bathroom door because that fan is so loud.
Yeah.
And now I walk in there and it's just silent.
It's like the power out? Oh, no, that's right.
Something is wrong here. Yeah, but it's great. So that was a good added benefit that we did at the same time.
Yeah.
But we put one of the Eero transmitters in that closet, which serves the upstairs and probably some of the downstairs.
And actually acts as the router, too.
And then we also did one in the great room, which is right next to the Roku, and gives it a signal because for whatever reason the Ethernet port cable isn't working. I'm not sure if it's just a bad cable or
I think the port just died on that thing.
The port of on the Roku.
On the Roku, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, maybe. So anyway, it was very easy to set up. Like I was really surprised. I thought Chris was coming over and he was going to do it and I'd be there, you know, if he needed me to help with something. But basically he's like, oh, go get the app. And so I got the app and it was incredibly easy. And it's so easy to open the app and see what's connected to the Wi-Fi. And I haven't mm-hmm. had any issues with it. There's just one network. And what's great is I have old devices in the house that would have automatically connected to one of the former Wi-Fis, right. And now I don't have to worry about loading up an old computer that might start syncing Dropbox from 4 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Or iPads, same deal. Actually, poor Bella, she thought the PBS Kids app was broken on the green iPad for at least a month we went. I totally forgot to put that on the Wi-Fi. Aww. So the only other thing is that the Roku, despite the Eero being right next to it, the Roku still, while watching shows, stops and buffers, and I can't figure that out. And that's playing videos through Plex, and I don't know now then if that is a Plex problem or if it's, you know, it's not super often. It's not like, you know, Netflix on a modem.
Is it particular like high resolution big files?
That's a good question.
If it happens with like say a small like weekly television show. Then I would think there's something else going on. But if it's large files, it could be your machine that's transcoding it doesn't have enough horsepower.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that could be. It to me, it doesn't seem like a Wi-Fi thing. But, you know, another thing it's been doing is just shutting down saying that there's no connection.
Mm.
But not Wi-Fi, not specifically
Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
you know, those Rokus are what, 2-3 years old?
Yeah.
Might be time.
Yeah, it might be. But it's so great. It really, the kids know how to use it.
Yeah. And it's like, what do you replace it with? Speaking of Roku, though, if you are a Roku app developer, we could use your help. We have a Jupiter Broadcasting Roku app that needs some loving, because I don't think user error has been added.
I think it has, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think I was able to get that, but nothing plays. There's something wrong with how it plays, and I've been working with the dev, but I think he's just got other things going on. Yeah, so if anybody does have expertise on that or would like to lend a hand, I can connect you with him and get the access needed. And we have a dev channel in IRC, or do we have one in
Discord? Yeah.
Discord? Oh, sweet.
Yeah, that seems to be the hotspot right now.
Okay, in Discord.
And discord.me/JupiterColony to get in on that business. Yeah, and we'd love your help if you are a Roku developer or if you develop apps for Android TV or even Apple TV, I suppose. We'd actually like to get on all the platforms people watch on if we can. As cannabis becomes legalized across the country in various forms, undoubtedly businesses are stepping up to capitalize on the revolution, and Jack in the Box, I think, has nailed it.
When the day turns into night, my hash browns turn into my new $3 munchie mashups. Crispy hash browns, tasty white cheese, mashed up with your choice of savory egg and bacon, buffalo chicken and ranch, or jalapenos and bacon, each for just $3. Why? Because everything gets more interesting at night. Vampires wake up, werewolves come out, and the boogeyman gets his boogie on. So try my delicious $3 munchie mashups and keep the party going until the sun comes up. Ooh, $3 munchie mashups.
So there's only one thing the user error program could do when there's a trend like this is we have to send field reporter and resident non-smoker Angela to investigate this pot munchie phenomenon.
Thank you. Yes. I happened to be scrolling through my Facebook feed and I saw that commercial.
Shocking.
I know. I question whether or not I should mention where I saw it, but thanks for okay, anyway. And I have had one every day since I saw the ad. I went out and got that S and I put it in my mouth. I got the hash brown egg and bacon one, which in the commercial, they don't actually say the name of it.
Which is almost the best part.
And I didn't pay attention to what the words were saying in the ad. I just was like, that's cheese and hash browns with a fried egg and bacon. Like, yeah, I need that.
It does look good.
So I pulled up to Jack in the Box. I looked at the first menu, which is not where I order, and I see it, and I see what it's called. And I decide immediately, I am not saying that. So then I drive to the next menu, and I say, I want that hash brown thing with, like, eggs and bacon on it. And you know what she said? Oh, you mean the wakey bakey?
Yep.
And I just said, yeah.
Yeah, I've yeah, felt that way, too. Yeah, I haven't ordered this, but I have felt that way about some of the product names. So, okay, the Wakey Bakey's got egg, it's got hash browns, it's got queso on it, right?
Yeah.
Bacon bits.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
It is so good. And I screenshotted my telling Chris about it in Telegram because it is so great. I said, no shit, JITB has a hash brown with white cheese sauce, fried egg, and bacon on it. Effing amaze balls if you're hungry.
Which I then was.
He said, what? First of all, why the F has that never happened before? 2017 and we're just making that? Second of all, that sounds like the best kind of gut bomb. And I said, it was stupid good. I was like giggling the whole time I ate it. Couldn't believe how good it was. Hashtag Murica.
And they've got several others, too. So Jack in the Box, you should reach out and sponsor the User Air Show.
Right. This is not a paid ad.
No.
I got to say, the guy in the ad, he sounds kind of really nerdy.
It's supposed to be Jack. It's like a new voice of Jack.
Oh.
Yeah. That's Jack in the Box.
Yeah. So the chicken one is called Hangry Chicken Hash.
Yeah.
And the jalapeno is Jacked Jalapeno Hash. I'm not going to try the other two. Satisfied with the egg one. Yeah. But it is so greasy. Like, it greases through the bag so fast.
This does feel like they're marketing towards stoners, though. 100%, right? Like, they're going towards the stoner. I mean, you call it a wakey bakey, and then they call it the munchy mashups. That's what all the products together are called, the munchy mashups.
Yep. At night, you know, after you get off work and smoke a few.
I think that's literally what they're going for.
I do think this is, like, something that you could easily make at home, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, really easily.
Yeah.
Yes. Probably.
It's only $3, though.
But the cheese sauce is so good. Like, when fast food tries to do cheese sauce, it always tastes burnt or just not right.
Not like cheese.
This is amazing. Every bite is good. Every single bite.
Huh. I don't know. So I guess it's probably not unusual to people in the States, but people outside the States might not know that, like, around dinner time, like, our fast food restaurants have lines around the order windows. Like, there's, so there's it's quite a competitive market around here. And Jack in the Box is stepping it up and going after the cannabis fiend.
Mm-hmm. And it's only $3.
I have something to share with the class, and I mentioned this in the last episode, but I fumbled the name a little bit, and I didn't really focus on it, and I actually then, upon reflection, talking to the Beard some more, realized that this book touches on a lot of things that Beard and I have talked about. Sometimes when we do the solo episodes in particular, you and I have talked about society, the work ethic, the culture of being proud that you're working tons of hours and that you don't get enough sleep, and how that scene is like a good characteristic, and people grind themselves into the ground for some of this stuff. Those are themes we've touched on in this show. And the book that I sort of half recommended last week, but would like to wholeheartedly recommend this week, is called Tribe. I'll play a sample of it for you just a little bit. I got the audiobook, obviously.
In the fall of 1986, just out of college, I set out to hitchhike across the northwestern part of the United States. I'd hardly ever been west of the Hudson River, and in my mind, what waited for me out in Dakota and Wyoming and Montana was not only the real America, but the real me as well. I'd grown up in a Boston suburb where people's homes were set behind deep hedges or protected by huge yards, and neighbors hardly knew each other. And they didn't need to. Nothing ever happened in my town that required anything close to a collective effort. Anything bad that happened was taken care of by the police, or the fire department, or at the very least the town maintenance crews. I worked for them one summer, I remember
what's interesting about this is he talks about how, other things being aside, the devastation of property and loss of life, those things aside, which, you know, I don't say that lightly, and often times of horrible circumstances like Irma or war, even people drop their cultural classes, they drop their societal structures, and it becomes a more of like a tribe, like a Native American tribe, and people become much happier. Their people stop going to see psychiatrists. People stop taking pharmaceuticals. There's people that were otherwise considered in a pretty bad mental shape start seeing improvements in these otherwise horrible conditions. And the book goes in to talk about the German Blitz, where they were bombing the hell out of London, and they have data that goes all the way from World War II to Katrina that demonstrates this. Hmm. And it's called Tribe. And the audiobook, the reason why I like to recommend the audiobook is the voice is really great. The guy's got a great book voice. And it's only 2 hours. Well, it's like 3 hours. It's 2 hours and 59 minutes long. So it's not a particularly like long, like if you're going on a long drive, it's great. And really extremely thought-provoking. And if you've ever sort of looked around at things we do in society and gone, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Or, you know, you've wondered if maybe sometimes priorities are a little out of whack and... Or you wonder, why do people go insane and shoot from, you know, a Las Vegas hotel? This book will give you insights into a lot of it, and I think it's worth thinking about. So it's called Tribe, and I'll have a link to the Audible version, which I got. Do we still have an Audible affiliate, Ange? Can they affiliate us somehow with that? Because that'd be really cool. I'd probably have to generate some sort of stupid link or something, but we do have an Audible link if you're not already signed up at the very bottom of the Jupiter Broadcasting website. And I thought it was a great read or listen. I listened to it on the drive back from, I listened to it on the drive to New York. And then upon reflection, Hadi and I decided to listen to certain chapters of it again on the way home, just to really make sure that like we had really pondered it all. And it made for great conversation while driving too. So Tribe, I'll have a link in the show nizzles.
Does it approach unification? Like dropping prejudice, and I was trying to figure out if that's
where,
the direction.
Like where it goes there.
You said that people become a tribe in the face of severe tragedy.
Yeah, yeah.
So does it touch on unification at all? Or?
Well, I don't. By unification, it's sort of like
everybody
community.
Coming together.
Community, yes.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regardless of some differences that may have been a problem in the past.
Yep. Yeah, and okay. A lot of that stuff, you know, sort of like your job, your income, where you live, your race are all sort of dropped. Mm. And it talks about how that doesn't last necessarily because
right.
regular society, especially as emergency workers and whatnot come in, and we start to then hand back over to the authorities, then we start to go more inward and start to think more about ourselves again. Anyways, it's a fascinating read. Basically, the tribe explains why we are stronger when we come together and how that can be achieved even in a divided world. I don't know if that last part is true, but it sure sounds very positive. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. That's where you go to sign up for a free 7-day trial for one of the greatest platforms ever created in the universe. Literally, at least as far as I can confirm, LinuxAcademy.com, one of the best platforms in the multiverse, perhaps. Maybe I should say that, to learn about Linux. They got everything you need to get hands-on experience with self-paced, in-depth video courses in every freaking Linux and cloud and DevOps topic. Hands-on, real good, like, scenario-based guides to give you experience. And if you ever have that performance anxiety, ladies or gentlemen, that's where the hands-on labs come in, because they give you the real-world experience, easy for you to say, and you can SSH into their system and actually experience it, say, on a Debian box or on a Red Hat box or on one of them Ubuntu boxes. And if you ever get stuck, real humans are available to help you, full-time instructors that they've hired. It's just one of the many things that makes your subscription extremely valuable. When you're ready to go down a certain path, they've got learning paths just for that. If you've got a busy schedule, they got course schedulers for your busy day. And if you want to get certs, well, guess what? They got courses created just for that, too. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged is where you go to support this, not those other shows, this show.
Now, Chris, when you say real people, do you mean like people like in a call center in India?
No, I mean robots that have a really great AI. No, I mean real human beings there at the Linux Academy. It's real peeps. In fact, they're often out at community events. They may be at Siegel, for all I know. You can follow them on their Twitter feed to get a little sense of that. And you can meet some of them real human beings at some of those events sometimes. LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Why not sign up for a free 7-day trial? LinuxAcademy.com/unplugged. Well, as we record today, the Pixel 2 was announced, as well as a smattering of other Google products. And I got to say, I'm really disappointed. There's no notch on the Pixel. I mean, what the heck? Everybody knows you're supposed to do notches now, right? No?
Yeah.
Have you not seen the notch on the iPhone X? It has like a forehead where they have like cut out part of the screen, and they have like a Kinect sensor in there and stuff.
Well,
and
it's basically you just take the phones you already have and then push up the screen on the sides.
Yeah. It's got horns, basically, screen horns. So they opted not to go with the notch. But there's a few other things that Google announced today that I actually think is maybe more interesting. They're really doing some cool stuff with the Home Assistant. Some of the things they did feel super derivative. Like, they have essentially an AirPod competitor now. And they announced the Google Assistant Max, which is for $400 as a competitor with the HomePod. And they, you know, they tried to spend a few minutes showing really great video about how the speakers are designed, just like Apple. Super derivative. It just feels gross when Google does that stuff. But
it's called Max, like M-A-X, yeah, right? But it sounds like M-A-C-S.
That's true.
Max.
Yeah. They reported they've sold 55 million Chromecasts, which is pretty intense.
Wow.
And they've introduced little mini homes that are going to compete with the Echo Dot for $50. They're going to ship mid-October, just in three different colors for $50. They have fabric, and you have to touch it. It's not, I don't think it's necessarily voice-activated. And they say they use touch fabric because it's covered in the top. Yeah. They also have debuted a $250 camera with I guess they call it clips. I don't know. I'm not really. This is all happening right now as we do it. But it looks like it's a little portable camera that works with iOS or Android, and it can take pictures using AI and automatically takes the pictures and then sends them to your phone when it thinks it's got a great one. So who wants to take their own pictures when you can put a camera up and the AI will take pictures for you and then send you the best, and you can train it and whatnot. And then, of course, they announced the Pixel 2, which probably everybody already knows about, so we don't really have to go into it. But it looks like it's a pretty great camera. So that's one thing people will be talking about. Now, if they match that with a really great camera app that performs really well, they could have something special there. Yeah, so Google's got a whole list of stuff. And it makes me wonder, so when do you think, Ange, that your house is going to end up with like one of these Echoes or one of these Homes? Or you think you're going to get one?
You know, I was going to ask if those are, like, are people even using those?
I think they're starting to, yeah.
But I don't know. I have a hard time with change. You know that, you know, I'm still on the smallest iPhone that I can have.
Yeah, see, and you don't use Siri, right?
I do occasionally. Oh, I asked Siri something last night. Oh, how many days till January 5th, Abby's birthday?
You know? Those things are handy, yeah.
But yeah, I don't see me using it yet. I don't understand what people do use them for.
I would say, so it depends on the use case. So like these small ones, like that dot over there, a lot of people will use them in the kitchen as like a timer or things like that, or ask for like recipe lookup information, which is kind of useful because a lot of times your hands are dirty or wet in the kitchen. And I'll tell you, one of the things that is useful but requires that you spend extra money is, of course, Amazon is more than happy, or Google or Apple is more than happy to sell you accessories that work with it.
Of course.
And then you can, so like here in the studio, we can control all the equipment with the dot. And the reason why that's really useful is you can be over here troubleshooting like an OBS issue but still getting the lights turned on and the camera turned on and stuff. So you might be stuck in one part of the studio, but you can still be affecting change in other parts of the studio. And like in the RV, in bed, I can turn the heater on out in the living room. So like if it starts getting cold at night and I know the kids are out there sleeping, I can say, turn on the oil heater in the living room, and it just, you know, I don't have to go out there and like flip it on or anything.
That's cool.
So that stuff's nice. And then once you kind of integrate that in, you get kind of reliant on it a bit.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting is the kids are really good at coming up with things to use the dot for that I never thought of. Like we'll be in a conversation, we'll have a question, and Dylan will just go ask the Echo. It doesn't even cross my mind that I can ask that. You know, like, they are better at remembering that you can use it for stuff that I don't normally think of. And of course, one of the things you can do is ask it for a fart, so they love that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they love that. And there's a bedtime story one, so you can, and you can say, Echo, tell bedtime story to Abby, and then it will use her name in the bedtime story as it reads it, which is kind of cool. And they're short, you know, and there's like 100 it picks from or something like that. So Yeah, there's various things.
I think these products are like, it's one of those products where you don't really see the use case until you spend the money to buy it. And then you start finding things that you can use it for.
There's a bit of that. It's like another input method. So it's nice to be able to be doing something with my hands and still do something else. Like, so today when I got to the studio, this is kind of funny. Yesterday I was sitting in my office and my fan that I have in the window fell out of the window, but I was in the middle of writing something. I didn't want to stop. So I just say, Echo, turn off office fan. And I just kept working and then I just got back up and put it up later. And then as I'm putting it back in the window, I can then say, Echo, turn on office fan. And then it turns back on and my hands are full at the time each time. And it's nice. It's a little Star Trek. It's a little bit of Star Trek in 2017. And it seems to be that, the approach that Amazon and Google are taking is go cheap. Go with like the $50 pucks here and there. Amazon's going to be given away at some point. And then try to fill in the other range at the top end where you're going to have the HomePod, which is going to be a huge set of like six speakers and a subwoofer. It's basically a home assistant built around a subwoofer. And now Google has announced the Google Home Max, which is essentially a home assistant built around two subwoofers.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a real range now. And that's the other area, once they get good speakers, where it's really awesome because you can bark at it to just play music. And that's one of the things it's actually the best at.
That's probably the only thing that I would use it for, or the primary thing,
right.
I guess.
And you can also use it as a speaker for your phone. So if you already listen to something on your phone, you can just say, send it to this instead.
Right.
And it'll start playing on there. So if they start putting good speakers on these things, I think it makes it more attractive because they are really working hard to integrate in music streaming and podcasts and live streaming, news streaming, all that stuff. And that is, then it sort of becomes like a modern day radio. It's kind of cool. I'll be probably just sitting back and watching on the Google Home Max. But if anybody out there gets one of these newer assistants and wants to write us like a little mini review and tell us what you think, I'd definitely like to know, or hit us up in Discord, because I'd still like to know what people think about it. I don't think I'm really in the market for a Google one.
Mm-hmm. I have a kind of funny story.
Huh.
The fan that I turn on when I go to sleep, it's going out.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And when I turn it on, it like goes, just the propeller goes a little bit and then it slows down. And Dylan happened to, you know, we have mom and Dylan time, and he walked in and he's like, what's wrong with your fan? I'm like, yeah, you know, it's not working. I think you need to talk nice to it, you know? So he went up to it and he's like, hey, fan, come on, you can do it. And it started going a little faster. I'm like, wow, dude, good job, you know? And I'm like, now talk mean to it. Fan, you suck, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it slowed down. And he was like, whoa. Yeah, and he looked at me like, how did you do that? And then I'm like, talk nice to it again. And he talked nice to it again, and it went full speed, you know? And so that was like a week and a half ago. I swear to God, it's probably going to cause a fire in the middle of the night. You know, like, this fan needs to be replaced. But last night, we were just about to watch Big Brother. Because we're behind, and the fan was going, and he's like, "Oh, I got it, Mom!" And he got out of bed and came around,
started talking,
and he talked
nice to it,
and it right away turned on, and then he knows to turn it down to the low setting, because the high setting is the only one that works.
He's a good boy.
Anyway, so he knows how to talk to technology. You say ask for a fart.
That's how the syntax works. Yeah, it's kind of clunky.
So you don't say fart.
No.
Please fart?
No.
Can you please fart?
Because ask for is summoning the fart skill that somebody developed on the internet. So there's like a command structure.
So like ask for a car horn.
Well, you would have somebody have to make a car horn skill, but like...
Or ask for a bedtime story.
Man, somebody is out there creating all sorts
of
lame stuff then for it.
Yeah, it's sort of... the most structured, the Echo, it requires the most structured syntax. So you have to say ask for or tell or turn on.
I'd say the Google stuff is the most structured.
Oh, that's
true. In a horrible way.
Yeah, in a bad way. In a way that doesn't make any sense. Like, it's in the Google one, you'd say like, okay, Google, talk to fart time or something. Like, it's got this really weird syntax. Really, Siri's got the most natural human syntax, but... she has sort of a more limited skill set, too. So it's like, she's the one that's easiest to talk to, but she also is the one that often just says, let me search the web for you.
Right.
Which is never the answer you really want. Yeah. I think Actually, really, if you were gonna get any of these, I would just stick with Siri, really, because then it's tied across your phone and your Mac. So you could, if you set a reminder or a calendar appointment, or you want a reminder about a calendar appointment, then you could set it on the calendar in your Mac, and then iCloud would sync it to the. Mm-hmm. Whereas this stuff doesn't talk to iCloud necessarily. So the thing I use Siri for absolutely the most, in fact, the thing I use the watch for all the frickin' time. First of all, it's great because when my phone's paired to like my car or something in Bluetooth, I can still use the mic on my watch without like having to go through the car system.
Oh.
So that's always like a go-to mic for me. Plus, I just hold it right here while I'm talking. The other thing that's really nice about the watch is it like a walkie-talkie. Whenever you hold down the crown, Siri is listening. So you don't. I don't even do like the "Hey Siri" invoking. I cancel. I just. I just hold the thing down, and you know, I'll just speak to it, and then I remove it, and I know it's done.
Yeah.
And so I can say, set a reminder in 1 hour, or set a reminder. Like a lot of times when I'm at your house, I'll be like, oh yeah, I need to do this tonight, and I'll be like, set a reminder when I arrive at home, and then wherever the RV is parked, I have marked as home in my contacts, and then it just automatically generates reminders when I get there. And none of them offer that except for Siri.
Mm.
So that to me is just above and beyond valuable, because obviously if I don't capture right when I think of it, I don't retain it.
Yes.
So yeah, I hope Google is successful, because I want all these to be more competitive, and I like that they're chewing at the bottom end of the market. But I think if I was going to just buy one at this point, at say towards the end of 2017, I'd probably either get HomePod or the Google Max, so that way I could also have really good sound. And I'd probably get whichever one's going to tie into the ecosystem that I play in the most. So if I was an Android user and I was heavy into the Google apps, I'd be tempted to get the Google Max. And if I'm an iPhone user who has reminders and calendars in iCloud, then I'm more tempted to go with the HomePod. Mm-hmm. And then you have home automation on top of this. So when you buy like a light switch or a light bulb or a fan that you can invoke with one of these home assistants, you have to get one that speaks the right protocols. And so Amazon's happy to sell you ones that talk to Alexa. Apple wants to sell you ones that run HomeKit. And these different assistants speak different languages. So depending on which one you get, then you have to get accessories. They either talk Alexa or talk HomeKit or talk whatever the Google Home API is going to use. And so that adds a whole layer that makes it confusing. So I think it's still a small market. I don't think it's a huge market, but it's starting to spread out more and more. Because one of the things that I found really useful for it was when Hadi and I were like 2 hours out from getting home to the RV, which it was like late from New York. It was like 10 or 11. And it was cold. And so when we were about an hour and a half out, I got all these messages. I can just flip up here on the bottom. And these are all the devices I can automate. And the ones that are lit up are the ones that are on. And the ones that are not lit up are the ones that are off. And so I can just go in here and I can say, oh, Hadia might still be at home because some of the heaters are still on. and she has a lamp at 100%. I went in here and I turned on a couple of the heaters and a couple of the lights before we got home, so it was warm. And what's cool about it is I can even go in here and I can push in, and this is actually the dimmer for the light. And I can actually remotely from here in the studio affect the brightness of the reading light in the RV.
And now she's going to message you.
Yeah, right. I think it's got an interesting future to it, but you have to find the niche. Or I guess the better way to put it is you have to find the problem it solves.
Is it poor man's home automation?
Yeah, it is. It's not cheap necessarily, because you got to get like the devices.
But it's not like...
You don't wire your house.
It's not NOAA level.
Right, yeah. You're not putting like a control panel in and wiring it all.
Yeah, it's like piecemeal, so you can slowly build it out over time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's individual, like PC building versus buying a complete system.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy the components at a time and add it together. Like the RV, at some point, it's like $25. I want to get a little sensor. And I plug that sensor in, and then it is aware of allergen conditions, humidity, temperature, and it can take action depending on the conditions. So I can say, when the temperature in these two rooms on average is 60 degrees, turn the heaters on.
Mm-hmm.
And then turn them off when it gets to 70.
Mm-hmm.
And if the air pollution level in the RV is at X amount percent, turn the fans on or whatever. And I think that's going to be really nice in the winter.
Yeah, well, and with Dylan and myself being allergic to dust mites, mm-hmm. they thrive around 70 degrees and more than 50% humidity.
Yeah, humidity is
like
the only thing it'll monitor.
So, yeah, so I monitor humidity and try to keep it down. A couple years ago when the power went out for a couple days, the house got down to like 45 degrees or something. And so I was pretty sure that all the dust mites were dead at that
point. Killed them all off? Nice.
But, you know, as soon as you reintroduce the heat and walk in with clothes, yeah, I mean, it just, yeah, gets out of control
again. It's gross.
So,
it's actually really, yeah, that is a gross aspect. Yeah, so being able to monitor the air quality and take action depending on that is pretty.
And get alerts about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now I just have a magnetic one on my fireplace in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And I look at it every once in a while, but it's the only place where it's at.
Right.
And yeah. Not
I so. Had I had a situation that I totally regret that I didn't catch sooner in the RV, because it's obvious this was going to happen eventually. But the sink that we use the most in the bathroom is it the connections for the PVC drain pipe just got loose after, you know, 15,000 miles of shaking.
Yeah, right. That would. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously it would happen. And I just didn't check because I just didn't think about it. And so one day I opened up the cupboard and I went to pull out some cleaner stuff and it was wet. And I'm like, what? And so the whole bottom of the cupboard is all wet and a little water damage and stuff.
Is it wood?
Yeah. It's not like destroyed, but I really was like, okay, this is, I got to catch this. And so one of the things is those sensors will also do leak detection. If you put it on the ground, it's got 3 gold contacts. And if they detect water, they'll send you an alert. And that is for $25.
Yeah.
All right, that one might be $35 with the water leak sensor.
Well, in the meantime, maybe get a plastic tray to.
Yeah,
that
well,
fits
now
in
I'm
there,
checking
maybe.
It. Now I've added it to part of my routine before we leave. I check before we drive. But I didn't know. And
you have a shower in there, right?
Yeah.
I've bought this product on Amazon called DrainWig.
Oh yeah.
DrainWig. It's a flower that has a keychain chain hanging from it, the little balls,
and it goes in like down the drain and cleans it out or what?
You just put it in there and it catches hair on the way
on the way down.
Yeah, and so then by the time your shower is backing up, you just pull it out and put a new one in.
I had some fun with caustic soda to clear a really bad clog.
Oh yeah,
and that stuff is like dissolve a body stuff. So you got to be careful with it. Like,
you couldn't be in there, right?
No, you have to. You don't want to breathe it and stuff,
right,
but.
Yeah.
That really worked.
Is it crystals?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some crystals.
Yeah, it really did the job.
Yeah. Well, good.
Oh, boy. I was like, boy, if we got any bodies to dispose of, this is the stuff.
And it doesn't mess up the tank?
Well, I don't know for sure.
Oh, shoot.
So we got in there and then we get it out immediately. We just drain it and then we rinse and rinse and rinse and flush.
Sure.
But we were like, we just got to a point where that clog had gone on for too long. It was like a grease clog. So,
I was gonna say because your hair
long. It wasn't the shower; it was the sink. Yeah, I know it did. Not anymore. Although I do need a trim haircut because it's still the guy didn't do a great job. But yeah, it wasn't my hair; it was grease. Okay. I'm pretty sure it was bacon grease.
What? Why are you putting bacon grease?
I don't
down
know
this?
How. To, I would never. I would never throw away bacon grease. I love bacon grease.
But, yeah, it doesn't go down.
I think what happened is just maybe like cleaning a lot of plates or something, or I don't know, but
yeah, I always let it congeal and then I use a spatula and just kind of wipe it onto a paper towel.
Oh,
if I don't catch it in time to like store it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
I know.
Grease tips with Chris and Ann. Hashtag ask air. I'm going to toss this one over to the beard. If you could push a button and after the push of that button, 10,000 hours of knowledge would be transferred into your brain about any particular skill, what would it be?
Hosting?
Oh, podcast hosting.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, you got to start somewhere.
Well, just hosting in general, because if I know how to host, that is going to make these podcasts better. That is going to make my Twitch stuff better. Basically, everything I'm doing will be better. And it's knowledge that you can't just gain unless you do 10,000 hours.
That's true. I feel like mine right now would be like something really out there for me, like carpentry or something that I might not have an innate interest in learning but would still find extremely valuable to actually be proficient in. Like, I would love to be a good carpenter. Like, I'd love to, like, just bang out a wood frame when I need something or
build shelves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That'd be a good one. Yeah, I'd love to be able to build shelves. That'd be great. That's probably a good place to start, even. But I don't have, like, a natural inclination to just, like, devour information about that.
You could go more general. You could be, like, 10,000 hours in construction in general.
Yeah.
You just build a house.
Yeah. I just, anything like that. because I have a pretty good motivation to learn things I'm interested in. So that's not really where I'm lacking. It's that I don't seem to be able to learn things that I'm not interested in.
I could also see you doing something like electrical engineering.
Oh, that would
really,
be good.
Really cool stuff.
I could really use that. In fact, I have to tell you guys a story here in a little bit. But what about you, Ange?
I am totally, I don't know. At first, I was thinking in immunology or something health related, like, darn it, I'm forgetting the endocrinologist.
That'd be good too.
Just to understand the body more and yeah, but so then also I was thinking coding.
Would
be cool, because I love figuring out, and Dylan, he shares that. He loves math problems and equations, and I think he'll do really good at coding. So, yeah, I'm not decided. I literally just read that Ask Error question. So,
all right. Okay. Well, here's why I think the beard might be right about electricity. So I got up a little early this morning about, you know, so if it's not kids, it's technology or it's neighbors. So this morning at 5:15 a.m., the Bluetooth speaker just started connecting and disconnecting from Hadia's phone. And when it does that, it announces connected to Hadia's 6S, disconnected to Hadia's 6S, reconnected. Like, it just sits there and does that. And so now I'm up. Right, now I'm up because now I got to go turn the thing off and all that. So I get up and I sit down and I start working at the dinner, little dinette table in the RV. And an hour probably goes by, and so I start watching TV while I'm working, and I'm watching the news about the situation in Spain. And all of a sudden, TV goes out. But it goes out in a very abrupt way where, like, there's like a clunk sound and because the speaker cut out. But it's not immediately obvious what happened, because I'm in an RV that has batteries. And so all the lights are still on, and my heater's still on, and everything's still working, except for my TV just turned off. And I look around, another appliance is off. And so it starts slowly connecting the dots that I've lost power, but I don't have to do anything about it immediately. But at some point, I'm going to have to do something about the fact that I don't have power. Otherwise, I'll lose everything in my fridge. I'm like, okay. So do I go wake up Adia? Because it's still like 6 a.m. at this point. Do I go wake her up? Because she's got the key to get in the barn. Or do I just chill for a bit? So I just hung out for a bit and just kept working. Just like watch some more TV, and then as the battery started to get low, which unfortunately got low faster than I'd like, I went and woke up Hadia, and she got ready, and we went in the barn and found the breaker that had broke, and you know, tried to do our fix stuff, but didn't go our way, and within 5 minutes we had blown it again, not doing anything out of the ordinary. Yeah, so it's a whole back and forth. We're still investigating it. I'm recording it for the vlog, so I'll put the whatever happens. But yeah, so this morning I was like, God, I really wish I knew electrical better, because I can see all the components. I can see where I could rewire and plug in and get 50 amps of service 10 feet from where the RV is parked at. But I don't know enough to actually do the work.
Right. Or if you'll burn down the barn in the process.
Or kill myself
at some
or
point.
Something.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Electrocute.
So that's something I'm going to have to figure out. Like, yeah, that was a thing this morning. Woke up to no power. Didn't see that coming. And what are the chances that it happens now that I'm back? Like, I would have expected something like that, just randomly get home and like I don't have power. Like, that's kind of what I expected. And I hadn't gotten any security alerts from the RV for like a couple of days, the last couple of days of the road trip. And so I was like, internet might be out, RV might be out of power, because usually there's enough going around in the neighborhood that one of the cameras gets, because I got a couple that will send me noise or motion alerts. And I hadn't gotten any. And I thought, okay, so something's wrong. And I got back, everything was fine. There was no unusual stuff. And then here we are a few days back, and then all of a sudden, power pops. And what are the chances? We weren't doing anything weird. We didn't have anything extra on. In fact, everything was pretty much off because I was being quiet because Hadia was still asleep.
I'm sure if you had 10,000 hours in electrical engineering, you'd know the problem in 5 minutes.
I think so.
Yep.
I think so.
I feel like sometimes I'm a technology whisperer. Yeah. I did the recent iOS update. And things were like getting clunky, and I thought, well, this is weird. I wonder if they've pushed another update, you know, or not pushed, but if there's another
like a
update.
Point update.
So I looked, and of course, yeah, they had a this fixes this, and I'm like, yep, there it is.
You know, yeah,
that's why my phone's been acting this way all of a sudden.
Well,
and
that's
then,
good.
Same thing with Firefox. You know, I use Firefox, Chrome, and Safari every day for almost everything I do.
Yeah,
and Firefox begins acting really weird, and I just think, I wonder, I probably I do close Firefox every once in a while just because I know it's a heavy load. But in this case, yesterday when I realized that something was more than wrong, I reopened it and it said, you have the latest version of Firefox. And one of the things that was messing up was Bitly.
Mm.
Every time I would go to Bitly, it wouldn't put the title in there. And it wouldn't, it would say that there was an unknown error and I'd have to refresh it.
And now it doesn't?
No.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So some technology, you're all about updating right away, like the phone and the Firefox.
Well, if it's not working, yeah.
But like, say, the OS on the desktop or on the laptop, you might go like a year before you upgrade that.
Your face. Honestly, your face told me not to update,
well,
right?
So it's often the case with the Mac OS. So.
I did wait on the most recent one.
There's a new one out
now. Because the prior one, you said, don't do that one. It's going to mess up iPhoto and switch it to Photos.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
So
that's your thing.
So I waited. And so when I finally did that upgrade to Photos and it was fine.
You did? You switched?
Well, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
I did the update.
And you just lost all your tags? You just lost all your
No? No, oh. but no. No, I didn't.
Oh, good.
No, I still, it's just called Photos now.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought they dropped that stuff when you moved over. Oh, that's good of them.
No, and in fact, one of the more recent iOS updates is they go back and forth on fixing this, and it's so weird. In the past, if you have a picture that you took and you modify it using just the basic camera options, it would just show the picture as it was originally when you go to import it. And then all of a sudden, it would only import the modified version.
Right.
And sometimes I wouldn't want that picture just in black and white, but there was nothing I could do about it because I imported it that way. Then, like I said, it just goes through this cycle. And now, I've never seen this before, now it'll show the original and the edited version. And you can choose between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
At least I'm not stuck with one or the other. But then I'm like, why are there two of those pictures? And they look almost identical. I just cropped a little bit out of it. Anyway, I forgot where I was even at.
What are you shooting? So, are you shooting mostly on the phone camera now?
Yeah, I haven't charged my camera.
Even though, don't you think it still takes a little bit better photos? Or do you think it's pretty?
Probably. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All on the phone now.
Yeah, I mean, okay, girl pockets.
Yeah, that's the thing. But you have a pretty small camera.
I do, but my
it's like one of those little Canon point and shoots.
My keys go in one pocket, and my phone goes in the other.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to put my camera with my keys. And I'm not going to put my camera with my phone. And I'm not going to use my back pockets because they do this stupid thing where there's buttons on your back pockets. You know?
It's supposed to be cute.
So, and I don't carry a purse because I keep my debit card in my phone.
I would say, I think this is why camera improvements are still the number one area that I care about on smartphones. And that's why the Pixel 2 is working on that. And the iPhone now, they're shipping it with dual lenses where you can zoom in and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the camera is still the area. Battery life and camera.
Mm-hmm.
Battery life and camera. Just make that better still. Like, they're getting fast enough. They're getting thin enough. That's all good. But please, give me more battery life and give me better camera. More camera. Because I can still see a huge difference in the photos I take with a DSLR versus the photos I take with my camera phone. And if I really want to save that moment, or I want to really enjoy taking photos, I have to use the real camera still. And I wish that wasn't the case. I don't want that to be the way it is. I'd much rather just be able to bring my phone and take great photos.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm starting to become that guy that's like, oh, you don't want to use the camera phone for photos, even though they're getting pretty good.
Supposedly, if you want like a really, really, really good camera phone, you want to look at the Sony phones.
Yeah, I've heard that
because they use their actual camera tech in their phones.
Yeah, I've heard they have really good cameras. I think some of the iPhone models are using a Sony camera too. But it sounds like the Pixel 2 has a really rocking camera based on the keynote that just happened today as we record. I always say that though. But you know, one of the things that's getting really quite good on these camera phones is the 4K video recording is actually getting pretty legitimate. I did some 4K video recording and on my iPhone just of like New York time lapses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really just turned out great. Just turned out super good. So, yeah, it's getting to the point where maybe you won't ever have to charge that camera up anymore.
Well, the thing is, your camera does take like some really good pictures, you know? But you don't need those all the time.
You don't.
Everything needs to look like you were in a studio or posing or whatever.
Right.
And even in the age of, let's create a thing with this picture on it, most of the technology makes it big enough that
Yeah.
It works. Yeah. You know, I have tote bags, you know,
that's
like
really, that's what it is. It's like, it's, you just want a memory.
Yeah.
You just,
so
yeah. That is still, it's still transformative. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not a great camera, it's transformative. I mean, you think about the amount of pictures that we have of our three kids mm-hmm. versus the amount of pictures that your folks had of you three kids when you were growing up.
I have a stack this much.
It's tiny. It's just yeah. a tiny
it's
little
like an inch and a half stack.
Yeah, it's a
same. And like, it stops at like age 7.
I have like one photo album, mm-hmm. right? And I don't even. It's somewhere in the studio. Like I don't even. Like, and yet I have gigs of photos of the kids,
mm-hmm.
and that's just going to increase, I'd imagine. Mm-hmm. So there's, and I think it's actually a good thing. I mean, like the whole narcissist Instagram culture thing isn't necessarily a good aspect of it, but being able to document history like this as we are, I think in aggregate, in as computer technology gets faster and able to analyze images better and quicker, I think it's going to be a good thing because we'll be able to, you know, you're going to be able to reconstruct entire days and stuff from some of these photos. There's so many photos.
Sometimes I have to.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. At one point, I was putting on the calendar, like, where I went with the kids, you know, this park, this restaurant, whatever. And because I had done that, I was able to narrow down where I left my keys.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and it is the same with pictures. Like, if something comes up after the fact, like, oh, crap, well, where was I that day?
Yeah.
I can look at pictures and see.
Yeah. That's a good point. It's also getting to the point now where some of the facial recognition and object recognition in software is getting legit.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can start tagging faces. You can start using like Google Photos, Google Photos just blows me away when I search for like Christmas photo with Dylan. And it just shows me, and I've never tagged anything once. And it just shows me all the Christmas photos with Dylan in them, just yeah. like that. And
I wish I had that. I spent so much time tagging pictures in iPhoto
yeah.
and stopped, you know, like 4 years ago. And so nothing since then is tagged. And it's
well, the photo stuff is doing facial recognition now. You just have to go in there and
it
tag
does,
faces.
Yeah, but it doesn't do like Google does with like, no. Christmas or find horses, you know.
There is some interesting search stuff. You might try it.
Like, would it import? I don't even know what I'm at.
There's some
100,000
like,
pictures, maybe.
Google Photos?
No.
Google Photos would, but
no.
The Apple Photos app has some
sort of
search.
I want all my photos in Google.
That's
photos,
the thing.
You know,
that is the thing. See, I stopped a few months back, and I haven't. I've been sort of de-Googlifying, and that was the first one that was easiest for me to. And I still don't really have a great replacement solution.
But their automatic analysis and categorization is so good.
Yeah.
And it's really
iPhoto doesn't
I miss
have anything
it.
Like that.
I do
or
miss
photos.
It.
Yeah.
Like you can just search Christmas and you've mm-hmm. never tagged the photos, but it'll help give you everything with a Christmas tree.
I like that. And I kinda wish that somebody else would come along that was not Google and offer something similar. But I don't know. Like are photos, is that where I draw the line? Is that the thing I don't want to upload? I don't know. I really got to reflect on it a bit. And I wish there was just something in the meantime I could just run on my computer that would do it all locally. Just
yep.
the whole thing. I'll run some big gnarly process on one of my computers and let it analyze for hours and hours. I'm not going to run a data center of this. So it's not like it should be doable. It shouldn't require a huge server farm because it's a limited data set. It, you know, just process it in the evening for a few days and then give me the results.
I'm going to go ahead and invite myself back to a future user error because I did my 23andMe test.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we should get you and Chase on together because he just got his results. Do you have your results?
I don't have my results yet. No, they're like at step 5 of 8. So, but the thing is, I hate spitting. I hate talking about spit. I hate everything about spit. And I had to spit in this vial. And I eyeballed it when I first got it last year. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of spit. And you can't eat or drink right before doing it for 30 minutes. And like, I always have a cup of water. But now that it's winter, you know, I'm not drinking as much because I don't feel thirsty. But really, everybody, keep drinking water.
Mm-hmm. I need to.
And anyway, so I finally did it. And I am really excited. I posted it on Facebook saying, hey, now I can finally, you know, confirm that I'm related to my mom. Yeah.
She
was not happy about that. But I did both the genealogy or ancestry. I can't remember what they call it, but I did that and health. So literally in the terms of service or like the agreement, the fine print, it says basically you cannot unsee these results. Like, you have to be prepared to know that you have markers for certain diseases or, you know, different things.
Boy, oh my gosh.
And what made me think of this is when you're talking about client-side photo filtering is there are websites out there, and I'll share them in a future user error once I've done this. You can export your data and put it, run it through one of these places that will tell you additional information, you know, because if we see a word, we don't always know, okay, that means that you can't eat these certain foods or whatever, but this program will, you know, convert it and put it in layman's terms for you.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah. And there's a gal in Bellevue that does specific health focus, like these are the primary things that you need to worry about out of all this information that was given.
So they take the data and they're like, okay, well, based on my knowledge of...
She's a doctor.
Huh.
Yeah.
That makes like, it's like real legitimate customized medicine.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I've heard that that's a thing that's coming, is as we get better at doing these analysis, that medicine will become more and more individualized for each person. And that seems like that's going to make a huge difference.
However, 23andMe was just bought by a pharmaceutical company. Eyeroll.
Yep.
And also, there's a specific reason why 23andMe has been specifically done in the health portion. There is a genetic problem called MTHFR, which looks like motherfucker, right? And it is very important to know that, because when you have that genetic mutation, it means that your body cannot cleanse out heavy metals and other toxins that it needs to, like somebody that doesn't have that genetic mutation. So it's important to know that so that you can supplement properly, you know, to correct that and help your body detoxify. And also just it comes with a lot of other problems that you don't realize are being caused by that. So it's basically just like having like a thyroid problem like I do. You know, it affects everything in my body.
Right.
So unfortunately, in August, they stopped providing that information.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
So
Because like they worried it was turning into medical advice, essentially.
Which all the fine print says, this is not medical advice, blah, 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 which is fine. But it sucks. And the thing is, it basically is being treated like a parlor trick or whatever. You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know how better to say it.
We've made this huge scientific breakthrough, and now we're using it to give you watered down sort of generic information.
Yeah. And basically they can choose what you get to see.
Right. But they get to know it all.
Yeah. Right. So that's unfortunate. I don't think that I have that particular genetic mutation, but it would be good to know, and it just sucks that that's no longer available. But I do know that you can go to your doctor to get tested for it if they, you know, agree to do it. So
I guess, yeah. It does seem weird that you don't get access to your own information.
Yeah. But yeah, Chase commented when I posted it. He said, "Hey, we should compare results. Maybe we're related."
that's
a weird thing to say. Okay. Yeah. I mean, all right then.